Welcome to Craig the Decibels. I am Phil on the fly.
I am Greg the fucking Hessian.
We've been running into a shit ton of technical issues.
Our fucking recording device doesn't like two mics plugged into it.
Only wants one hole used. It's tired of two holes being used.
So it's like we're having a, like, we fucked up Pantera three different times, and then it didn't get the sound bites that Phil tried putting on from their original glam era days. If you listen to the Pantera,
which is
the decibels, yeah. It's like it goes quiet when Phil's hitting play on some old Gemini songs.
It's like our football season this year. Nothing can fucking go right for either one of our teams.
Yeah, at least my Steelers have won two games, but they got their asses handed to them fucking 6-30 something yesterday.
Yeah, but your guys didn't let up 70 points in one game, okay? So I don't want to hear it.
You made a record. Your team made a fucking record since 1966.
Yeah, not the record we wanted to make. Jeez.
Yeah, I got a record in my career, most times being fired, most investigative interviews. It's just, you know, it never ends. Sometimes you got to. I used to hold the record at Townsend Junior High for the most suspensions and Saturday work studies next to Jacob Aguayo.
So we're going to start this episode like we do every episode. We got our music news, birthday segment, and our This Day in Music.
No, we're going to start off with the soundbite of what we're going to do.
Okay.
This is what we're going to talk about. Many of you don't know these Misfit songs. You know,
you just ruined it.
Version, but I'm gonna play sound bites of a lot of shit for you guys to dive into the Misfits. If you like punk metal and the macabre, all their songs are mostly written about 1930s, 40s, 50s, freaking horror movies. Bela Lugosi, Dracula, all those four guys, the Martians. It's great.
I'm looking forward to it because I really don't know much about the Misfits. I'm sure if you guys saw the Instagram post before this episode came out, you could tell we were doing the Misfits because Greg had this really sick coffin set that I took some pictures of and posted. Before we get into all of our Misfits stuff, I'm actually going to start out, and I hope this soundbite fucking works. If not, I'm sorry, but we're going to run into music news.
Music news. With Phil on the Fly and Greg the Hessian.
So this first bit of music news is for anybody that's listening in the King of Prussia area of Pennsylvania.
My family's from Pennsylvania, so I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
October 13th, which is coming up in about 11 days from now, we're recording this on October the 2nd, there is a Famous Monsters Festival going on out there at the Valley Forge Casino.
Nice.
And if you can make it out there, Sharon, Jack, Kelly, and Ozzy are doing a special appearance. They're going to be doing photo ops and autographs. So if you guys want to go out and meet John Osborne, a.k.a. Ozzy.
Yep. A lot of people don't know his real name's John.
And his wife, Sharon. I wish I had the audio clip right now. Sharon!
A.k.a. fucking the bitch sometimes.
Sometimes, but she did get him on the straight and narrow, though.
Oh, she's the one who knew he was a talent. She saved his ass from cocaine and alcoholism in a hotel where he owed the recording studio, her father, thousands of dollars after Black Sabbath fired his ass. She said, you are fucking Black Sabbath. And you need to go solo.
Unfortunately for Bill Ward.
Well, Bill Ward.
We'll say that for the...
She fucking... He pissed him off because he's the one who sued Black Sabbath or her dad because they fucking raped him for so much money. That's what the song Ripped is about that Metallica redid.
Let's save that for our Sabbath episodes.
We'll take a few of them.
So the Foo Fighters have announced a full North American tour behind their newest album, But Here We Are. It's their first album and first tour since the untimely passing of Taylor Hawkins. And it's going to have their new drummer, John Friese, is going to be on there. So here are the tour dates for you guys. It's going to start out, it says it's going to start out in July of next year in Queens, New York, at Citi Field, where the New York Mets play. And then, let's see. That's where it says it's going to start, but I have some October dates. They're going to be in Phoenix on October 3rd of next year. October 5th is El Paso. The 7th is Austin. Then they're going to go to Houston, back in Austin. Then they're going to travel to Abu Dhabi, Perth, Australia, Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Auckland, Christchurch, New Zealand, Wellington, Manchester, England, Glasgow, Scotland, London, England, Cardiff, Wales, Birmingham, England. Then they're going to be
in Birmingham. That's where Black Sabbath is from and Led Zeppelin.
And then this is where their North American tour starts out in the States. They'll be July 17th and 19th. They're going to be at Citi Field in Queens, New York, which, like I said, is the home of the Mets. And if you take the number 7 subway in New York, you can get there. Then they're going to go
7. They don't call them A, B, or C.
No, it's numbered. Oh, at least the last time I was out there a few years ago,
you know, it was number seven. We're both right. They have A train, B train. Trust me, I was on the A train, then, and B train many times, and then they have the numbered ones also. Yeah.
Then they're going to be in Boston, Mass, at Fenway Park.
Fenway Park.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the bar outside the Boston Stadium, where the baseball team plays, I've been told is one of the best bars ever. And a guy, my old neighbor, Mark, he guy, shout out to fucking one of the craziest, coolest fucking older dudes ever. He passed away. God rest his soul.
Rest in peace. Crazy bastard with your Irish car bombs.
Well, here's an even better one that his nephew turned him on to, if not his like second cousin, turned us on to one night at his 50th birthday party. It was a fucking pickle shooter. You take a shot of Irish whiskey,
and
pretty much
chase
Jameson,
it with pickle juice.
And you chase it with pickle juice. It kills the taste of whiskey. If there are those that don't like shots or whiskey, fucking evil kills it. We did tons of them.
So once they leave Boston, they're going to Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Ah, where the Hershey bar came from. The best
chocolate company. That's July 23rd in Hershey. July 25th, they'll be in Cincinnati. And then speaking of Marquee Guy and his Minnesota Vikings. They'll be in Minneapolis, Minnesota at Target Field.
Skull. Fuck Target.
Then August 3rd, they're going to be in Denver at Empire Field at Mile High, which is the home of my Broncos.
They caught on fire and gave up 70
We don't talk about that, okay? We don't talk about that. Then they're going to be down in Petco Park in San Diego, for those of you in Southern California.
That used to host the Chargers till they moved to LA.
The closest one to us is going to be at BMO Stadium in Los Angeles. That's the home of the LA Galaxy.
BMO, like,
it's out in Carson.
Bring my own beer.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's out in Carson, near where they have the Goodyear blimp and stuff out there where the LA Galaxy plays soccer.
Nice.
And then they're going to be in Portland, Oregon.
Ah, Portland.
And then they're going to end the tour in my old stomping grounds of Seattle, Washington.
Well, Portland's my old stomping grounds as a kid where I grew up before they legalized cocaine, meth, and heroin.
I think Dave Grohl knows a little something about Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, Seattle too. It used to be two beautiful fucking states, just went to hell after the pandemic. Oh, you want to do today's in history?
I'll do it in a minute. I got a couple more news stories to get to. This one I was kind of teasing Greg about a little bit earlier. Porno for Pyros is doing a reunion tour.
We got to go fucking see him. We'll make great pets. We'll make great pets.
They delayed it until next year because they're actually working on a new album.
For those of you that do not know Porno for Pyros or ever heard of them, it is Perry Farrell's band after Jane's Addiction disbursed. We've talked about Jane's Addiction. We've talked about Dave Navarro. I've mentioned, I believe, a phenomenal documentary on Dave Navarro's fucked up life growing up when his mother was murdered and his wretched fucking heroin addiction, how the guy is even alive. Perry Farrell, I don't know how he's still alive with Layne Staley dead. Definitely got to check out the true story. Someone corrected me on Instagram or something on the Jane's Addiction documentary where it shows Perry Farrell's girlfriend shooting up with the fucking cord of the phone. It's not called Jane Says, it's called something else, but definitely check them out if you want to see what not to do in life.
This is going to be their first time playing together in 25 years.
Porno for Pyros?
Yeah.
Yeah, the album came out in fucking like 95, 94.
Yeah, the tour was supposed to start this fall, but they, like I said, they delayed it because they're working on rehearsing and gelling again after 25 years. And they're in the studio working on some new music that they want to have ready for when they go out on tour.
Do you know how many albums they have? Did they have two or just one?
I don't know because I only remember the one album.
Me too, but you never know.
And I was like, I love that band, but I love Jane's Addiction too. Like, I've always been a fan of Perry Farrell.
I've told you guys before, I grew up in Chino Hills, and when I was in like eighth grade, my neighbor turned me on to Jane's Addiction, Red Hot Chili Peppers before anyone knew who they were.
Even if you don't like Jane Says or Been Caught Stealing.
Ah, those two songs blow goats.
It's just because they're overplayed on the radio.
No, they just fucking suck.
Mountain Song is a fucking Mountain badass song.
They
song.
Can play that every day and I would love it.
Coming down the mountain.
Oh, here we go. Oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started.
I got him started.
That's actually
baseline's intro. So, our last news story comes out of Las Vegas, Nevada. The Las Vegas Police Department announced that was on September 29th. They announced that they have made an arrest in the murder of Tupac Shakur.
Yes, they did. That's right. That was on the news the other day, and I didn't text the girl.
They arrested Dwayne Keith Davis. For his part in the murder of Tupac Shakur. This has been an investigation that's been going on since 1996. They got him for the murder of Tupac. He's the first and only person they've arrested in direct connection with Tupac's killing. He's also been charged with intent to promote, further, or assist in a criminal gang.
He's also been charged with promoting and assisting in the further promotion of a criminal gang?
Yeah.
What gang?
I don't have it in my notes, but yeah.
Doesn't name fucking Biggie Smalls because he's dead or in jail.
Biggie Smalls is dead, but Suge Knight's the one who's in jail. Yeah. But at least
Suge Knight's the one who killed Eazy-E with the fucking needle of fucking AIDS.
At least they finally got somebody. Before we get into our on this date, I know it's been a while since we've recorded and we missed a very significant date for us in heavy metal. Did. On September 27th was the anniversary of the untimely passing of Cliff Burton from Metallica. That right there is just a short clip of Orion from the Master of Puppets album, which is, I think it might be my favorite Metallica album. It's so fucking good. And Cliff Burton's influence on that album, he brought such like a classical music like side to that album. Like if you listen to a lot of his bass lines, like especially on that track, Orion, his influence is just so unreal to that.
I'm going to post, or Phil's going to post a picture because I hate social media. It annoys the hell out of me. It's fucking annoying. But I'm sending him a picture. I had the fortune to see Joy. Brought a tear to my eye to meet Ray Burton, Cliff's father, at Metallica's Orion Festival in New Jersey in 2012. And I'm going to send a picture to Phil so he can post it on the page. Yep. But Ray Burton was just a great guy. And unfortunately, he lost two sons. His first son passed away, and Cliff said he wanted to be the greatest bass player ever in memory of his brother that died back in the fucking 70s. So freaking then Cliff Burton passes away. So it's just, you know, life sucks. But he was definitely a major influence in Metallica that we will get into eventually in the future. He taught James, if you've ever seen the Behind the Music on VH1, James Hetfield will admit and say that Cliff taught him harmony. More than just the speed metal blues riffs that James knew. Cliff brought in classical music to the band, which Ride the Lightning was a huge influence up to Master Puppets and then future on James just kept the knowledge that Cliff taught him.
And
he was a genius beyond his time.
Just to kind of keep it basic, too, if it wasn't for Cliff Burton, we would not have a really badass cover of Thin Lizzy's Whiskey in the Jar by Metallica.
And if it wasn't for Cliff Burton, we wouldn't be doing a Misfits Crank the Decibels, because Cliff Burton had a tattoo on his right arm, I believe, of the Misfits Fiend Skull. That's their motto. Everyone likes to... skeleton guy, that's called the Fiend. And Glenn Danzig gave props out on September 27th on social media, saying that Cliff Burton was one of his biggest fans, and if it wasn't for him, many people wouldn't know about the Misfits, and he never had a chance to meet them. Neither did or Metallica back in 86 when he passed away. So freaking Glenn Danzig gave a props out to him the other day, saying, you know, he was our hugest fan, and he turned to many other people like myself and other metalheads or punk rockers onto an underground, underrated, phenomenal punk band that hopefully I do some sound bites later to get you guys into them. They got a lot of badass songs. You do not understand the power of fucking the Misfits and Doyle on guitar.
I often wonder, like, if you know, like, the whole story behind Cliff's death, like, if Kirk Hammett has, like, some issues going forward, like, so basically, and Greg can correct me if I'm wrong, they were playing, were they pulling, like, cards to see who drew the high card to pick what bunks they were staying in?
Yeah, they pull cards to say, hey, what bunk, do you get the top bunk or the bottom bunk? So Kirk and Cliff were pulling cards, and Cliff pulled the fucking ace of spades, goes, ha, I got the ace of spades. Kirk's like, fuck, you have the bunk.
And took Kirk's bunk.
And he fell out the window and the bus landed on him and then landed on him again. A lot of people don't know.
I didn't know it landed on him a second time. I knew it landed on him once.
Yeah. And then when the fucking crane came, like as they were waiting for a crane and the ambulance and all these other medics to come, James is walking up and down the street in his fucking boxers looking for black ice. Because the bus driver swore there was black ice and he's going, fuck you, you fell asleep. He was pissed.
From what I heard too, they were screaming, where's Cliff? Where's Cliff?
Yeah, because fucking once they woke up, Lars broke his leg. Fucking James got burned by hot coffee. I mean,
how many times did James get fucking burned?
Many a times.
Montreal. Dude,
Electra tried to burn him. They sued him and lost. So fucking, they were lifting the bus up to try to, you know, find Cliff, and it fucking, the crane or the chain's broken. It fell again. So they're just like, fuck, if he was still alive, the second fall of the bus,
right,
you know, did him in. It was just fucked up situation.
All right,
but that's the Swiss Alps they were in fucking freezing cold weather.
Do you think
1986?
Do you think the bus driver fell asleep?
Nah, I think he might have hit black ice. Yeah,
I think that's highly likely. Like, you can't see black ice coming.
Yeah, but still black ice, like, makes you move the vehicle around, but to swerve and tip it over. Yeah. Maybe he did fall asleep and saw a cliff and fucking, no offense, saw a side of the cliff and turned the wheel. You never know.
You never know. So we're going to start out our On This Day as we're reminiscing about Cliff Burton. What do you got for On This Day?
All right. On this day, October 2nd, 2023, in 1869, political and spiritual leader Mohandas K. Gandhi was born in Porbandar, India. Porbandar, India. Gandhi. It's a great movie if you ever know about Gandhi, the spiritual guy. 1919, the greatest fucking consecutive year next to 2020, the decline of the Western civilization. President Woodrow Wilson had a serious stroke at the White House that left him paralyzed on his left side. In 1941, during World War II, most of you people need to remember World War II and what great fucking country you're in. German armies launched an all-out drive, aka Blitzkrieg, against Moscow. Soviet forces succeeded in holding on to their capital.
It's like if it wasn't for the U.S., we'd all be saying Sie Heil right about now.
Sie Heil, we'd all
if
be fucking
Germany
slaves and socialists.
World War II, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking don't forget what country you're in. That's right. They don't teach history to these millennials. Sorry.
teach the real history.
Yeah, no shit. In 1944, German troops crushed the two-month-old Warsaw Uprising, during which a quarter of a million people had been killed. Quarter of a million. Oh, here's a great one. 1959. Rod Serling, one of my favorite fucking guys.
Come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
No, that's nope. Bob Barker.
No, no, he's the one who says it. Rod Serling, he's the...
This is Rod Serling.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the same guy.
No, Rod Serling is the guy from Price is Right. Rod Serling is the greatest, like 1959, the Twilight Zone made its debut on CBS with the episode Where is Everybody? Starring Earl Holliman. Where is everybody?
All right. So, are you going to play it?
I'm going to try to.
All right, I'm going to let you play it.
How's it start out?
To quote Kanye, I'm going to let you finish.
Something
like that. So, in 1967, Thurgood Marshall was sworn in as a Supreme Court justice, and then he ended up actually getting his friend, I think his name is Henry Blackman, sworn in as a Supreme Justice shortly after that. And Blackman is actually the one who ruled on Roe v. Wade.
All right.
Yeah. So without Thurgood Marshall getting sworn in today, there, you know, the ruling wouldn't have been what it was on Roe v. Wade about abortions being legal. Also on this date in 1967, all six members of the Grateful Dead were busted by California narcotics agents for possession of marijuana at the group's 710 Ashbury Street house in San Francisco. Imagine that.
No fucking heroin or cocaine or LSD?
It's just the Grateful Dead.
Driving that train high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. That's actually a great truckin', album. Their first, yeah, trucking. Got my chips cashed in.
I keep trucking.
Grateful Dead has some good fucking songs. Check out their first album.
They have like probably the most loyal following.
Next to Fish.
And Rush.
Yeah. Nobody wants to go to a Fish concert. Hey, you guys freaking, we got to post a link to one of my favorite Great Debater YouTube cartoon videos. It's fucking meth versus marijuana. And this little fucking cartoon character of a meth fucking chunk is arguing with the marijuana leaf plant dude of who's the better fucking drug. Trust me, dude. You will laugh your fucking ass off. Look up the Great Debater meth versus weed.
The fucking true crime story, I just heard about a girl fucking doped up on meth.
Fuck.
And what she did to the guy that she was sleeping with.
Oh, Jesus. Don't even want to know.
Yeah, you really don't. And I'm going to spare you guys the details because it involves necrophilia and decapitation and
worse than fucking Lorena Bobbitt and fucking shit on Crime Shooters, huh?
She sodomized his dead body with a dildo.
Oh my god. Why would you fucking dead asshole and do it when he's alive? Make him suffer, fucking enjoy it.
Like I said, she was doped up on fucking meth. Which makes me rethink the fucking Semi-Charm Kind of Life by Third Eye Blind song. Like,
dude, I grew up around speed, methamphetamine since 1988.
Don't do it. Don't do meth.
It is the worst fucking drug. Fentanyl's bad, killing people. It's fucked up too. But they're cutting meth and speed and coke with fentanyl. But that meth will...
Anyway.
Hook, line, and sinker 30 years later, you're a toothless fucking whack job who molests some fucking innocent 12-year-old girl because you're a fucking loon.
Talk about Grateful Dead, and then we go down the path of drugs. Go figure.
Yeah.
So in 1971, Rod Stewart...
Rod Stewart!
He had a number one hit with Maggie May, a song about an older cougar taking a young high school kid out of school to have her way with him.
Oh, she's only 17.
No, Maggie May by Rod Stewart.
Well,
I really should be back in school.
But what about Don't Stand So Close to Me?
Yeah. We're going to talk about that guy in a little bit.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
In 1982, John Cougar Mellencamp was...
Didn't Jack and Diane.
Two American kids growing up in the heartland. Jackie gonna be
a football star. Jackie a debutante in the back seat.
Got his hands between the legs.
Yeah. Or Diane's a debutante in the back seat of Jackie's car. 1983, a year later, Bonnie Tyler had a number one hit with this song.
I love Def Leppard, Motley Crue, and ZZ Top, and had to listen to this shit all day long driving around in the car.
I'm just going to torture you because I kept this track on here.
But I love that song, Total Eclipse of the Heart.
On this date, October 2nd, 1995.
Wait, let's back up to 1984. Richard W. Miller became the first FBI agent to be arrested and charged with espionage. Miller was tried three times. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison, but was released after 9 years.
I thought he would have been sentenced to death. So, on this date in 1995,
all right, the great
British band Oasis, released their second album, What's the Story, Morning Glory, which had the hits Don't Look Back in Anger, Champagne Supernova, and Greg's favorite song.
By now, you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
And Wonderwall.
I will give them props. They are a Christian freaking brother band, more power to them.
The brothers don't really get along anymore.
Faith and righteousness, but that album just annoyed the hell out of me. My old roommate used to play it all the time on Sunday. And I'd be like, dude, it's freaking our day off. Or sometimes I had to work Sunday at the gas station, but he always played it. And I was just like, he put it in fucking cassette or CD player in his old Nova. And I was like, oh my God, this band it was too mellow for me. I don't like him. I'll take Creedence Clearwater Revival any day over Oasis.
CCR is fucking awesome. So on this date in 1998, we lost an American icon, I guess you could say. Like a true legend of the Old West. On this date, 1998, October 2nd, Gene Autry passed away at the age of 91. He actually owned the California Angels for a while.
Really?
He did. He owned the Angels.
Well, no, he owned the Anaheim Angels before they turned into the California LA Angels.
He had 25 successive top 10 country hits.
He had one successful baseball team,
and
too.
At the time of his passing, it was estimated he was worth $320
million. Fuck, $320 million?
And his only number one single.
The most famous. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed
that
Reindeer.
That was his only number one single, was Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Fudge!
Reindeer.
That was Gene Autry?
Uh-huh.
Fucking
the Singing Cowboy.
Damn, that is a phenomenal song. That's on many movies, many cartoons.
Everywhere.
Every fucking shitty-ass holiday.
So on this date in 2001, and if you ever have a chance to check this out, regardless of Kevin Spacey's track record of late,
of child molestation, rape, and sodomy on
he
boys.
Hosted a night to come together, and it was a night for John Lennon's Words and Music in New York City's Radio City Music Hall. It had artists Alanis Morissette, Moby, the Dave Matthews Band, and the Stone Temple Pilots.
Nice.
Nice. Stone Temple Pilots did a fucking awesome cover. It's like almost like an acoustic cover of Revolution.
Really?
Phenomenal. And what's his name actually didn't really look high.
Oh, Scott Weiland?
Yeah.
He was probably sober for that week.
And they closed the night with John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance. I have the DVD at my house, actually. They did an awesome job with that show.
Stone Temple Pilots tear shit up. They do an awesome job on a lot of stuff.
In 2003, police were called to a suspected, I'm too sober for this shit.
Too much larceny.
Suspected burglary at the LA house of one Courtney Love.
Ooh.
Oh no, Courtney Love's former boyfriend and ex-manager Jim Barber in the early hours. Courtney Love was picked up outside and detained with officers noting Miss Love's behavior was consistent with that of being under the influence of a controlled substance.
Oh, dude, I remember seeing that on the news. She was belligerent.
Shortly after Courtney's arrest, she was taken to the hospital with a suspected overdose.
Speedball, cocaine, and heroin?
It doesn't say. It just says overdose. I mean, it's Courtney Love.
Yeah.
It could have been all of the above.
They say she killed Kurt Cobain. That's just hearsay.
She was a little batshit crazy.
Yeah. That fucking, you know, she was married to a fucking alien genius that changed the music industry for fucking ever. He's like, right? Yeah. All right. In 2006, an armed milk truck driver took a group of girls hostage in an Amish schoolhouse in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, killing five of them and wounding five others before taking his own life.
Doesn't sound like that did a body good.
No, that's not. No. In 2013, on this day, a jury in Los Angeles cleared a concert promoter of negligence, rejecting a lawsuit brought by Michael Jackson's mother claiming AEG Live had been negligent in hiring the doctor who killed the pop star with an overdose of a hospital anesthetic in 2009.
What was he using to get sleep?
Propofol. I've had propofol. They gave me, here's my shit talking to a fucking conglomerate demon of a medical facility called Kaiser. After my hernia surgery, they freaking gave me prescription pills, antibiotics, shit like that. Heading out the door in a wheelchair, they gave me a fucking shot of propofol. I was fucking high as a kite. I was happy. There was no hate in the world. It was like, woo, yeah, it fucking propofol. What do you need to give someone propofol after the hernia surgery? I was in no pain. I was still sedated from the anesthesia that they gave me during the surgery. It's just bad medical facility, and propofol will fucking, holy shit. Now I know why he overdosed on it and died. And what killed Prince? Was it fentanyl or propofol?
I'm not sure.
I think Prince might have been fentanyl. I'll look it up right now.
So I just picked up for a couple of bucks Purple Rain on Blu-ray.
Oh, and just so you know, Porno for Pyros had another album.
Go, go.
Sorry.
Go, go, go.
Stop.
That's okay. Porno for Pyros had a second album in 1996 called Good God's Urge.
All right, let's try that again.
Go, 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 go. Go, shorty, it's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a Cardi like it's your
birthday. It's my party.
All right, it's time for our birthday segment, if you couldn't figure it out from that little clip.
And FYI, Prince died of an accidental fentanyl overdose.
Fuck one fentanyl.
Greatest fucking
fuck
guitars.
Fentanyl.
That was beginning. So that was.
We're going to start way back.
2016.
We're going to start way back in 1945.
1945, World War
II? On this date in 1945, U.S. singer and songwriter Don McLean was born. He had hits with a song. Oh, I fucked up and completely missed something else that happened on this date. So before I get into Don McLean, we're rusty as fuck at this, by the way, guys.
We don't care.
And I'm mad at myself for missing this because we lost a true rock and roll legend on this date. I believe it was 2017.
We're cheap entertainment. We don't care.
Where's my fucking notes? Yeah. On this date in 2017, we lost a true fucking rock and roll legend, one of my favorite artists of all time.
Favorite artist is the Beatles. This is another one.
Lost Tom Petty to a heart attack on this date in 2017.
And he was in the middle of the recording studio doing
he was
a new
on
album.
Tour. He was on tour.
No, he was going back and forth from the recording studio doing a new album, I thought.
Yeah, and he was also on tour because I was going to go see him, but then I decided not to because I had just gotten a new job and didn't want to request time off right away. And I was like, well, fuck it. He'll be on tour again.
Yeah, because he passed away in L.A., didn't he? Or yeah. The L.A. area.
Yeah. He's, you know, mostly known for his solo career, which I played right there for I Won't Back Down. But he was also part of one of the original supergroups.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
A band called the Traveling Wilburys.
Really?
A band that consisted of Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne from ELO.
ELO? Did not fucking know that.
Roy Orbison? George Harrison of the Beatles.
George Harrison?
And to round it out, Bob Dylan.
You're fucking kidding me.
No.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They have
Bob
some...
fucking Dylan and uh-huh. George Harrison. What year was that? Fucking 61?
No, this was like, I think the...
50s?
I want to say it was like late 80s. Maybe even a little bit earlier than that. But had some really good shit like Handle With Care, Skeeter and the Monkey Man. I can't remember some of the others, but I would check them out. The Traveling Wilburys, they're a fucking awesome super group.
Damn, I've heard the name, I've heard the band Traveling Wilburys, but I didn't know it had all that freaking lineup.
Yeah. So, back to Don McLean that I so rudely interrupted.
Keep talking.
On this date, 1945, Don McLean, he had a minor hit with a song called, I think it was called Vincent or Starry, Starry Night. I'm pretty sure it's called Vincent. But his biggest hit, which I'm sure you all know.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride.
And that, of course, is his legendary hit, American Pie, which is basically written about two different things. His parents were going through a divorce at that time, and he was dealing with some stuff. And then, as we all know, February 2nd, 1950, I want to say it was 59, the airplane American Pie crashed, which had Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Richie Valens on board. It's considered the day the music died.
And if you ever hear the song Goodbye American Pie, it's
that's
like
Don McLean.
12 fucking minutes long.
It actually held the record for almost 50 years for being the longest song to reach number one before Taylor Swift's All Too Well 10-minute version broke the record in 2021.
Well, Iron Maiden's Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner needs to be up there. It's like 13 minutes.
What about Inagata De Vita?
Who cares? Slayer did a bomb version of Inagata De Vita, but it was only like 3 minutes.
Born on this...
Slayer tore shit up on that one.
Born on this date, October 2nd, 1951. Probably one of the greatest bass players of all time, I would think.
October 2nd.
I would put him up there.
For a singer, like his bass baselines weren't really badass, like,
but
Paolo Machucci, some Paolo guy.
Like, on that track right there, he's using a fretless stand-up bass.
Dude, my buddy freaking is a phenomenal bass player. To be able to
play a fretless stand-up bass.
I have a good friend that I grew up with there in the High Desert, went to high school with, that was a huge Primus fan. And he played a stand-up bass live in concert one time. I saw him like 20 years ago. I was just floored. I was like, holy shit, Jerry, that's fucking badass. And yeah, he's like, fretless stand-up basses are tough. And he played one like a fucking cello.
We're going to go back to the 80s. Our final,
my favorite era I grew up in. Our
final birthday today, born on October 2nd, 1971.
Are we even going to get to the Misfits today?
We will. This is the last one, and then we're going to get to the Misfits.
No, this is fun. This is you guys getting to know us in music and love and fucking life.
This singer was born on this date in 1971. This was her only number one hit.
I think we're in love now.
Is Tiffany.
Tiffany.
Doing her cover of a 1960s hit by Tommy James and the Shondells. Now, Tommy James had a lot of success in the 80s with a lot of covers. Tiffany had a number one hit with that cover right there of I Think We're Alone Now. Billy Idol did a cover of Money Money, which is a Tommy James. And if that wasn't enough for those two to have hits with a Tommy James cover, Joan Jett covered Crimson and Clover, also in the 80s, which is written by Tommy James. Her and Tommy James are actually really good friends.
Joan Jett and Tommy James?
Uh-huh.
Joan Jett, just so you guys know, was one of the original members of the freaking
Runaways. With
Lita Ford, Stacey West. If you get a chance, check out the movie The Runaways. Phenomenal movie about girls and punk rock in the 70s and how, you know, it was a sexist fucking country.
And there's an awesome lesbian scene.
Yeah. And their fucking manager, producer was a trans cross dresser, one of the first fucking cross dressing guys. Just awesome movie. The Runaways is great. Their albums are pretty good too. I actually picked one up on vinyl. And has some damn good songs that you'll never hear on the radio or wherever you listen to shit because there's not much radio. But definitely got to dive and divulge into freaking Pat Benatar and Lita Ford and the female rockers trying to rise up to fight with men. Like, here's a funny story. You ever watch the old VH1 Behind the Music? People talk and they interview other people and they'll be like, yeah, we're watching this band. From a distance, because you're in an arena, can't really see the band from the bleeder seats. And you're like, oh, wow, man, those freaking chicks tore shit up. They're fucking awesome. And then you meet the band and you're like, oh, my God, that was Poison. They're like, dude, you guys, like, we thought you were girls. You tore shit up and had such high voices. So that was the 80s, which many podcast millennials don't know about the 80s because people from the 80s don't really listen to podcasts like me.
Runaways, they ended up opening for Sabbath, and then that's how Lita Ford and Tony Iommi met. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Uh-huh. Lita Ford and Tony Iommi dated for a while, and then Lita Ford did the song with Ozzy Osbourne. Uh-huh.
What was that duet? I don't know why I can't think of it right now. Kiss Me Deadly is the only song that's coming to my head, okay. But that's a Lita Ford solo, yeah. Uh-huh.
It was a great song. Great. It was on MTV all the time. Very famous. So,
that's going to do it. It took us 45 minutes to get through our openers.
Awesome. Hope you guys enjoy our rhetoric.
Let's see if we can get through the Misfits.
Got my dog whining at the fucking door. Pull it down, Shadow. All right. Let's get through the Misfits with another Misfits song.
Okay. Let's see how accurate this is.
Let's start with one of the most famous Misfits song that Metallica made famous.
Die, 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 my darling.
Nope, not that one. Fuck. If it wasn't for Metallica and Cliff Burton having a tattoo of the Fiend on his arm and always wearing Misfit shirts in concerts and shit for years, Glenn Danzig already said he was one of his biggest fans. I never would have got into the Misfits.
What was it?
That was your blood orange beer from the...
The Elysian.
Yeah. Phil's drinking some beers. I got him a 12-pack of the Elysian mix, and he had space dust and loved it. Now he's drinking the blood orange one, which is new.
That one's
so he's just asking me, like, what the hell was that? Because it's phenomenal. So, if it wasn't for this song, Metallica's Garage Days Revisited, no one would really, not no one, but a lot of many, many, many people would not know about the Misfits.
So fucking what? No,
that's anti-Nowhere League. That's the anti-Nowhere League.
We're talking punk.
This is Last Caress.
Oh. I got something to say.
Actually, turn the mic around so it's not facing me and facing the amp. Try that again. So that song came out in 1988. I believe that album came out. It was their first album after Cliff Burton died. And they were just breaking in Jason Newsted with five cover songs. Last Caress and Green Hell are combined, the last ones by the Misfits. They had Diamond Head, Small Hours, which is a phenomenal song, Crash Course and Brain Surgery, and then The Wait. So if you've never heard Garage Days or Garage Inc., which has all those songs on disc two, check them out. Yeah, it's Metallica. If it wasn't for fucking them, Misfits wouldn't be so popular.
So what I have here in my notes is that the Misfits are an American punk band often recognized as the pioneers of horror punk, a subgenre blending punk and other musical influences with horror film themes and imagery.
Yes, they are.
I would say Kirk Hammett is kind of in that genre too.
Well, yes, some of his custom ESP guitars have the Mummy. They have a Ouija board. They have Frankenstein. Many of these Misfits songs are based on the old Bela Lugosi horror movies of the 1940s, 50s, black and white movies.
The group was founded in 1977 in Lodi, New Jersey, by vocalist, songwriter, and keyboardist, which is weird for me to even think of him on a keyboard.
He played an electric keyboard.
Glenn Danzig.
And with that,
his first recruit to the Misfits was drummer Mr. Jim.
Mr. Jim, nice.
Yeah,
wasn't Dr. Chud?
No, it says Mr. Jim, and then Diane DePaza was supposed to be on bass, but never showed up for the band practice. And was replaced by Manny Martinez. Oh, no, Mr. Jim was replaced by Manny Martinez on the drums, and then Jerry Only joined on bass guitar shortly after.
According to my Misfits box set infold, they took the name
From a Marilyn Monroe.
From a Marilyn Monroe's last film, which is called the
1961,
the Misfits.
Do you think, considering they came out in 77, you think they were influenced by like the Sex Pistols?
I don't know.
Because I think the Sex Pistols was a little bit earlier punk than that.
Sex Pistols might have been
maybe
around
the New York Dolls around that time too.
Those were all the 70s. You got to watch the movie Decline of the Western Civilization, Part 1 by Penelope Spheres. She divulges into a lot of that East Coast punk that came from New York. But with Phil saying on that, I'm going to play a little soundbite of Die, 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 My Darling, which many people may know from Metallica, but the Misfits version. The Misfits version, you can hear the electric piano keyboard that Glenn Danzig played.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it at that. After Manny Martinez replaces Mr. Jim on the drums, they meet Jerry...
Only.
Well, no, they have him as Jerry's...
Kiafia.
Who was a neighbor of Martinez, was dating a neighbor of Manny Martinez and happened to get a bass for Christmas one year.
Jerry Kiafia.
And he joined the band. He and Danzig would be the only two consistent members of the band up until their breakup in 83. It says they all practiced together for about 3 months without a guitarist and that Danzig provided the rhythm on his electric piano.
Yep.
And then they had their very first performance at a legendary landmark music venue in New York.
CBGB's?
Uh-huh.
Fucking A.
That's where they had their first one.
Fucking
A. In April of 1977, they performed at CBGB's in New York. And then they recorded their first single, Cough/Cool, which they released through their own label, Blank Records.
All right, should we play it for
them? If you have it.
It's a weird song. It makes you wonder what it was written about. I'm thinking like PCP or menthol cigarettes. So the greatest thing about owning the box set is you get the lyrics to every Misfit song. So whenever you don't understand what Glenn Danzig's mumbling, you can read it and get the lyrics because it's hard to understand what he fucking says. And I'll start with this and let Phil get back into it. When Metallica played at the Heavy Metal Music Awards, like the day after Jeff Hanneman passed away in 2017, Glenn Danzig said, true story, because he hopped on stage with Metallica doing Last Caress. He goes, Cliff Burton called me at fucking 2 in the morning one time, drunk, going, what are the lyrics to Last Caress? Yeah, Cliff wanted to know the lyrics to Last Caress, and I think he even asked him London Dungeon.
Is this a Misfits episode or a Cliff Burton episode?
Yeah, well, fucking, if it wasn't for Cliff Burton, many people wouldn't know about
so,
the Misfits.
To get back to what Greg was saying a few minutes ago, Jerry's last name was misspelled on the sleeve of the record, prompting him to just be like, just call me Jerry Only. And that became his pseudonym, was Jerry Only.
Yeah, he's been Jerry Only since I've been fucking
That's just been his name for the rest of his career.
Nice.
So in August of 77, they got a guitarist to join the band. Frank Licata. Is that how you say that? L-I-C-A-T-A.
Where are you at? Point at it.
Down here.
Frank Licata.
Licata.
L-I-C-A-T-A. Licata. They're all fucking Italian Guidos in fucking New Jersey. They're fucking gangsters.
He took the pseudonym of Franchicoma.
Franchicoma.
Franchicoma, yeah. Allowing Glenn to focus on, or Danzig. We should refer to him. I'm going to call him Danzig. Fuck it. That's what everybody knows him as. To phase out his piano playing.
Electric piano.
And focus on his singing. And pushing the band's sound in a punk rock direction.
All right, with that, should we play fucking She?
So,
all right, keep going.
We'll play it in a second because at this point, I guess Manny Martinez was starting to become unreliable, and Mr. Jim came back into the band.
Mr. Jim came back after Manny Martinez left.
They found a recording opportunity when Mercury Records wished to use the name Blank Records for one of its subdivisions and offered Danzig 30 hours of studio time in exchange for the rights to the name. And Danzig, he accepted it.
So they gave him 30 hours of fucking recording time for the rights to the name of Misfits.
Not Misfits.
Or the Misfits?
To Blank Records.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So he gave up his record label, not the name of the group. And then in January of 78, the Misfits entered a New York recording studio to record 17 songs, 14 of which were mixed for the proposed Static Age album.
Phenomenal album.
That's, you got something off the Static Age album that we can take a listen to? Here you go.
Let me make sure it's off the Static Age, so I'm going to go to the Static Age album.
The band was unable to find a record label interested in releasing it, so they released four songs in June of 78 as the bullet single on their own label, Plan 9 Records, named after the 59 science fiction horror film Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Which was directed by a cross-dresser that Johnny Depp played, that guy in the movie. I forget which movie Johnny Depp played him, but the dude was a crazy, loony cross-dresser that directed a lot of these horror movies from Plan 9. Plan 9 from Outer Space was one of the movies, and that was his directing label, and Misfits loved them. That's what Glenn Danzig would write all the lyrics of these songs that I'll play for you later on about. Were all horror movies, stupid shit, B-fucking movies with Bela Lugosi, who was a huge fucking morphine addict that would shoot up all the time, and the fucking Lon Chaney, all those guys from the horror age, Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, I forget the other two that did Wolfman and the Creature from the Black Lagoon, shit like that. But this is one song that you need to hear off their first album. This is off of Static Age that many people know. And this is another one I love. This song's called Angel Fuck. This is Hollywood Babylon, one of their famous songs that a lot of people know. There's a little sample of a.
Playing the whole fucking album?
No, there's one more song I will play later and give you a great story about Texas on it.
So, when they did this, they weren't able to actually put out the whole album right away like they wanted to. They put out a few singles, like I said, on their bullet single. And the other songs would see release on various compilation albums throughout the 80s and 90s, but the Static Age was not released in its entirety until 96.
Yeah, there's a lot of cuts, extras. You have outtakes 1 and 2 on the end of this album.
So following the Static Age sessions, they began to shift in songwriting and appearance, with Danzig writing more songs inspired by B-horror and science fiction films. He started painting skeletal patterns on his performance of clothing. Like that's
called the Fiend.
And he began applying dark makeup around his eyes and styling his hair in a long point hanging from his forehead between his eyes down to his chin. Yep. So do you have like a mohawk? They called it a devil lock.
That's called the devil lock. That's one of their songs is devil lock. They had their hair like would just hang down in the front. And it was greased up or it was just freaking cut right where it was just like instead of a ponytail, it hanged in front of your face and it just hung down. You got to check them out. You'll see it.
So this kind of started the subgenre of horror punk.
Mm-hmm.
And then while they were on tour in October of 78, Coma quit the band because he didn't enjoy touring anymore.
Oh.
And Rick Reilly filled in temporarily to finish the tour. Mr. Jim also quit following the tour, citing a distaste for the horror direction in which they were heading. Within 2 months, they were replaced by guitarist Bobby Caulfield and drummer Joey Poole under the pseudonym Joey Image. And Bobby Caulfield was known as Bobby Steele.
Nice.
This is all new to me. The new lineup, Danzig Only, Image, and Steele, began performing in December of 78 and continued to evolve the horror elements of the band. And they released the single Horror Business in June of 79. The cover featured a skeletal figure inspired by a poster of the 1946 film The Crimson Ghost.
The Crimson Ghost.
Would that be the Fiend?
That is the Fiend, the Crimson Ghost. And
I guess, yeah, because it says the figure became the mascot of the band, and its skull image would serve as the Misfits logo for the rest of their career, and also launched a fan club named the Fiend Club.
The Fiend Club, which Glenn Danzig formed.
He operated in a do-it-yourself fashion from his mom's basement.
Yeah. And we're going to probably have to divulge in a second episode of the Misfits when they recapped in 96 with Greg Graves on singing and Jerry Only and other people on guitars, Doyle, but not Glenn Danzig. And then we'll get into a song called The Crimson Ghost They Wrote, which is a freaking awesome song, but it's Greg Graves on singing.
He says he did silkscreen t-shirts, assembling records and mailing merchandise and catalogs, booking shows and everything from answering fan mail in the basement. How much do you think those like original silkscreen Misfit shirts?
Well, they would do that. That's what the infold I have from the box set.
Yeah.
Like if you guys could pick up the Misfits box set shaped like a black coffin with the infold that talks about the band, it's the history of them. That's them. Telling you what they did and the lyrics to every song. And it talks about how when they were on tour, they would do their own silk screening in the van. They'd be in the van screen printing Misfits t-shirts with the Fiend on them.
I would love to find one of those original shirts.
Yeah.
That's probably worth a lot of money.
Shoot. Yeah.
It'd be a cool collectible.
Especially if it was autographed by Glenn or Jerry. And Phil's going to get into the future of when Jerry Only's brother joins a band, one of the greatest.
They talked about it a little bit earlier. I kind of skipped over the notes, but he had the same kind of devil lock hairstyle as Glenn Danzig.
Yeah. Well, they all started doing it, all of them. You can see it on the infold.
In June of 79, the Misfits performed as openers for the band The Damned, which I don't think I've ever heard of The Damned.
I've never heard of The Damned either.
In New York City. Only spoke with singer Dave Van Anen about the possibility of the Misfits touring the United Kingdom with The Damned. That November, the band released the Night of the Living Dead single. Again, a reference to an incredible horror movie from back in the dead by George A. Romero.
George A. Romero.
From 1968, if you really want to get technical.
It was in black and white.
It was.
Was that good?
It's a great movie.
Phenomenal.
And they flew to England and ended up touring with The Damned. Upon arriving there, however, they learned that Van Anen had not taken his conversation with Only seriously and had not planned on having the Misfits on tour.
Ooh, they flew to England, huh?
For no reason.
Oh, we're going to a future story.
Van Anen attempted to arrange for the Misfits to take part on the tour, but the band members were unhappy with the situation and left the tour after only two shows. And then Image quit the band, flew back to the U.S., with a return flight not scheduled until late December. The remaining members of the band had to stay there in London. Jerry Only spent time with Sid Vicious's mother, Ann Ritchie, whom he had befriended after Vicious's death in February 79. So I'm assuming there had to be an influence from the Sex Pistols, like I was asking about earlier. Danzig and Steele got on a flight with Skinheads while waiting to see The Jam. Wait. Oh, not a flight. They got into a fight.
A fight at a bar.
Danzig and Steele got into a fight with Skinheads while waiting to see The Jam and were arrested and spent two nights in jail in Brixton. The experience inspired a later song. What was the song called, Greg?
London Dungeon. I don't want to be held in your London dungeon. Take out your ugly dead. They called the British police were talking shit to Glenn, and the guys got in a fight at the bar when they threw them in the bar. They were calling them fucking the undead and the dead because they had white makeup and fucking their hair down. So the London dungeon lyrics were based on getting thrown in jail in London after getting in a fight at a bar with a bunch of skinheads.
So upon their return to the U.S., the Misfits released Beware in January of 1980 and then took a four-month break before adding Arthur McGuckin as their new drummer under the pseudonym Arthur Googie. During this time, Jerry Olney's brother Paul began learning guitar with help from Danzig and Jerry, and the Misfits began working on an album which they planned to release through their Plan 9 label, recording 12 songs in studio in August of 1980. Doyle practiced with the band and loaned the band his gear for recording.
Doyle. That was Jerry Olney's brother, Paul.
Yeah.
But he changed his name to Doyle.
He started going by Doyle, yeah. I think
Doyle wanted to go on tour with him. We'll tell you guys that if you don't have it in your notes, but his mom wouldn't let him until he graduated high school. He used to tell his brother and Glenn, hey, I can play the guitar songs way better, faster. I know this shit better than the guitarist. But his mom's like, no, not till you graduate high school. She made him graduate high school first, yep. And then...
That's pretty smart, though. So in August of... in August of 1980, after Doyle
graduated high school,
practicing with the band and loaned him their gear, that October, Steele didn't show up. He was a no-show for their scheduled recording session, and Danzig was like, you're out.
Yeah, you're gone.
So Steele went on to form the Undead, while Doyle made his debut with the Misfits at their annual Halloween performance in the Irving Plaza in New York City.
Halloween performance. All right. With that, I'm going to have to play you one of the greatest fucking Misfits songs ever that you probably never heard, because they just don't play them. It's just like you don't hear these phenomenal freaking Misfits songs. I'm trying to find my playlist. The Misfits. There we go. There we go. All right. Enjoy this. Remember Candy Apples and Razor Blades in Halloween.
I mean, it's almost and October.
I'm going to have to play a little freaking Halloween song at the very end of this that Misfits opened their concerts to.
The band would take another break for 6 months. After reconvening, the band had selected 12 songs from their August 1980 album Sessions and released them as Three Hits from Hell in April of 81. Throughout the rest of 81, they would continue to record tracks for a full-length album to be called Walk Among Us.
Walk Among Us.
They had planned to release it through their label, Plan 9, but instead accepted an offer. I don't know if y'all heard that, but...
That was a motorcycle dude about 90.
They accepted an offer from Slash Records and decided to rework the album before its release in October of 81. They released two more tracks from the 1980 Sessions. The Halloween single, which I think was probably when you displayed, right?
Yeah, that was Halloween part one. Wait till you hear
part two. On November 20th, they did a performance at the Broadway in San Francisco. Another band was there performing that night. A band called Black Flag was performing that night at the Mojave Gardens downstairs on Broadway. Black Flag's lead singer.
I'm trying to fucking. I know him.
Brain fart. I only knew him from his solo.
Henry Rollins.
Because I'm a liar. Henry Rollins, a longtime fan of the band, came down and watched them during the sound check and stayed and actually watched their entire set and actually sang guest vocals on We Are 138.
And with that...
Go for it, because I really don't have much notes left.
Shit, 138, should I play a live version? I have a recent live version of 138, which is off the new Misfits. Which I will tell you guys now, if you don't know, after the Misfits dispersed for 20 years, they formed back together and had a lead singer called Greg Graves. And when Greg Graves was with them, they recorded two albums. American Psycho and the other one. Brain fart.
You gotta end with We Ain't No Goddamn Son of a Bitch.
American Psycho and Famous Monsters.
I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch.
But they also have Cuts from the Crypt, which has like Rise Above and 138 live with freaking Jerry Only and Henry Rollins. So I'm trying to find it for you before Phil freaking should hit pause so you guys don't just have to listen to Riddick.
Okay, go for it.
I can't find 138. We are 138. All right, I'll just play the song. You guys find it yourself. It's freaking, it's awesome. Yeah, it's just like Henry Rollins was one hell of a punk rocker and so were the Misfits.
It's weird because I never really listened to Black Flag, so I was like, Henry Rollins.
You got to check out The Decline of the Western Civilization with Penelope Spheres directs it. And then part two is a metal years, but the first one is all based on punk rock, and it's mostly freaking East Coast punk rock.
Like, there you go. Still relevant.
We are the
So that's We Are 138. I'm going to go into a few more songs so you guys can freaking get to know the Misfits. Since Phil doesn't have much more to talk about. One of the things that many of you may not know, and you will know now, is the Jerry Only and Doyle, the guitarist and bassist for the Misfits, their family owned a machine shop in New Jersey. And they would go out on tour, do the Misfits band, then go back and work for the parents' machine shop. They've had that machine shop for 30 years. I think it might still be running. If not, it's probably shut down because China takes over everything and there are no machine shops in America anymore. CNC machines. I had friends up here in the high desert that grew up, worked in a machine shop here in good old Hellsperia. And freaking, they would go to the shop and go record after work. Doyle made his own guitar. A lot of these songs on these albums were recorded off a guitar that he made out of metal, and it's shaped like a coffin. He made his own guitar made out of metal, shaped like a coffin, strung it up, put a bridge on there and everything, and that's what many of these albums are made after. So freaking, you got to give props to the big old freaking Frankenstein looking Doyle. But here's some phenomenal Misfit songs that you need to check out that are off many albums or the box set. Children in Heat, Cough Cool, She, Who Killed Marilyn, Where Eagles Dare, Horror Business. I played Where Eagles Dare earlier for you guys, I think. But there's just many, many, many more that you've never heard that are pretty darn good.
I have some cool shit for you coming up.
Here goes to Children in Heat.
Blood, it's that blood, won't tell I die.
Children Under Heat, You Can't Control Them. This is the original recording of She on the electric piano before the guitar came by. This one is called Who Killed Marilyn?
Found her lying on her jet, her face all turning blue. They think it was an overdose, or could it have been the pack? Could it have been the Canada? Was it LAPD? But I ain't a mystery, baby, not to me. But a mystery, baby, not to me. Body cold. 60 kids, all full of slugs. No heads, no heads, no heads.
All right, so that was Who Killed Marilyn. Where Eagles Dare.
We walk the streets at night. We call Where Eagles Dare. They pick up every man, they pick up every little. With jaded eyes and pictures, you think they really care? I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch. You better think about it, baby. I ain't no goddamn son of a bitch. You better think about it, baby, baby.
This is horror business.
Too much horror business.
That was Psycho 78. I'm telling you, guys, you got to check this freaking, these guys out. They are phenomenal. That was Skulls. This is 20 Eyes. This is Violent World. All right, the next song I'm going to play is called Bullet. True story. This is based upon the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The Misfits wrote this song and it has some pretty explicit lyrics. They were on tour going into Texas and the governor of Texas said, "You better not play that song or we will arrest you on sight for freaking blasphemy or slander because of the lyrics of this song called Bullet."
One, two, three, four.
They got a sucker, sucker, jackass up. President for a minute, body in the street. Rock on it, rock. Kennedy shadow, yeah, it's all free. Rock on it, rock. Texas is an hour when the husband is dead. Texas is an hour when the big up is dead. Texas is the reason. Not a president's day. They got a sucker, sucker, jackass up. Arise, Jackie-O. Jonathan, a pain, a honey, well, arise and a bee, top down. Just gonna be our desert. My turn be your life, so, and the only way to get it is a suck, all fuck, all people, and the born and masturbation. Masturbation, they're flooded from the pound. Like a dry desert, soaking up rain, soaking up sun.
Yeah, so you can see why Texas was like, don't play that fucking song because it's kind of offensive. It's a great one, too. We're going out to another crazy Misfit song, and you're going to enjoy it.
Mommy, can I go on and kill tonight?
I'll just leave it at that. It's a great song. You guys should check it out. All right, now this one is Attitude. Phenomenal song. All right, now this is that Henry Rollins song that's phenomenal that I can't find the live version one to play for you guys, but I will find it later. That's all about frickin' killing. Here's the last caress. Thank you. That was Last Caress, the Metallica cover that made the Misfits more famous, or more, not even famous, just more broad for people to see them, because Metallica really blew up in the Misfits. Now here's a phenomenal song called Attitude. Then there's Teenagers from Mars.
We landed barren fields on the Arizona plain. The insemination of little girls in the middle of West Street.
And this one is a naughty song called Angel Fuck. This one is Skulls, one of the songs I opened the intro to the Crime Shooters, or fucking Crank the Decibels. Crank the Decibels freaking podcast. Skulls, one of my favorite songs. Corpse all hang headless and limp with bodies with no surprise. I want your skull. Now, we are going to play two of the greatest freaking Misfit songs, and I'm going to play them in their entirety.
We can get in trouble for copyright if you play it in the entirety.
Bastard. Well, then we're going to play
one of the two of the greatest Misfit songs ever that many people don't know about this time of year, called Halloween and Halloween 2. Here's Halloween.
In case you forgot, there is two of us on this podcast episode. So, in 1983, the band would end up dissolving. And Danzig would go on to form a band called Samhain. And then another band called
Samhain.
And another band called Danzig, which I'm sure you probably all know from the song Mother.
Which Metallica, James Hetfield would wear Samhain t-shirts in concert live in 87 and 86. So they still were promoting Danzig.
After they broke up, this band would go on to be an influential punk band and inspire a lot of bands, including Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Marilyn Manson, Green Day, The Offspring, NOFX.
Green Day and Offspring also?
NOFX.
NOFX.
AFI.
AFI?
My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
After.
About AFI. Those are all underground punk bands.
It reminds me of Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk?
Yeah, like even hearing like some of this like stuff from Dan's or from the Misfits, it reminds me of playing like Tony Hawk. Like
nice.
All the old school like punk rock music that was the soundtrack of that game. After some legal battles, Danzig, Only and Doyle regained the rights to record and perform. Oh no. After a series of legal battles with Danzig, Jerry Only and Doyle regained the rights to perform as the Misfits. They formed a new version of the band in 95 with singer Michael Graves and drummer Dr. Chud. This incarnation of the Misfits had more of a heavy metal type of sound, and they released the 1997 album American Psycho and followed up with Famous Monsters in 99 before they broke up in 2000.
All right, let me play some then American fucking Psycho for you guys.
Jerry Only took over lead vocals and recruited Black Flag guitarist Des Cadena,
yeah.
And Ramones drummer Marky Ramone for the 25th anniversary tour. This lineup released an album of cover songs titled Project 1950 and toured for several years. In 2005, Marky was replaced by Robo.
Project 1950 was an album where they just covered 50 songs.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Give me the mic. Let's let the fans hear freaking American Psycho.
Haven't you had the mic long enough, Greg?
Let's let the fans
Haven't you hear had the American... mic long enough?
This is American Psycho.
Don't play the whole fucking album.
I won't. This is like the first song. So after you got the Misfits 20-year dispersion, they formed and freaking came out with this awesome album. That gives you a little taste of the new Misfits with Michael Graves singing Walk Among Us and other songs that are phenomenal. It's a great album. It's a hard-ass. American Psycho is a beautiful album.
But you just got to check it out and understand it's not the Misfits. It's the new Misfits.
And then in 2009, the Misfits lineup of only Cadena and their new drummer, Eric Chupacabra Arce, released a new album titled The Devil's Reign in October of 2011. In 2015, it was announced that Cadena would be taking a break from music after receiving a cancer diagnosis and was replaced by Jerry Only's son. Talk about keeping it in the family.
Just Cadena freaking
Jerry the second. And presented Jerry, he presented him as Jerry Other.
Jerry Other instead of Jerry Only. Awesome.
That same year, Soulfly's Mark Rizzo joined the band, also playing guitar. He filled in for Cadena before Jerry would become the sole guitarist for the band. And then in September of 2016, to end it, for the first time in 33 years, Danzig, Jerry Only, and Doyle reunited for two headlining shows as the original Misfits at that year's edition of Riot Fest, along with drummer Dave Lombardo.
Oh, the old drummer from Slayer, one of the greatest drummers ever in metal history.
And second guitarist AC Slade. And they've continued to perform as the original Misfits lineup periodically, yeah.
Nice.
Or sporadically, yeah. I can't even imagine Dave Lombardo.
Oh, dude, Dave Lombardo's the shit.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest drummers ever, next to fucking Charlie Benante.
Yeah.
You know, between him and Charlie Benante, it's like a draw. They're like the two best West Coast, East Coast. They are both tens.
Yeah.
You got Dave Lombardo, you got Charlie Benante, and they're both tens. They're the greatest drummers on the fucking metal history.
Before we end this episode real quick, I forgot to at the top of the episode. I need to give a shout out to my good friend, my brother from another mother, Jason Kroom. And I need to give a shout out to VetTix. If you're a veteran, go sign up at VetTix.com. That's VETTIX.com. It's an amazing website. They take care of their veterans. You get to try to win, it's not even really win. You can sign up and get free tickets for a lot of concerts and other events that are going on in your area. I do highly recommend checking it out. And thanks to Jason and VetTix, we got free tickets to see Ringo Starr and his all-star band a couple weeks ago, and it was an incredible show. Check out our Instagram. I posted a couple videos. I still have some more I could post. Edgar Winter was freaking awesome. Getting to hear Frankenstein live was pretty fucking cool. And then Toto was there, so we got to hear the guys from Toto.
Well, the lead singer has fucking...
And they did Africa, Hold the Line, and Rosanna, which is pretty awesome. The guy from Average White Band was there, and they jammed out on some pretty cool shit. And Colin Hayes from Men Without Hats was there. We got to hear from Land Down Under and Who Could It Be Now. It was pretty fucking awesome. And I think the coolest part, too, was they had two drummers. So you had Ringo doing drums, and then what was his name? Bissonette was the other drummer. And it was fucking cool. Like, when you hear two drummers playing at the same time, it kind of gives it, like, this extra, like, really cool kind of like bass backing sound to it. Even though they were like in sync the whole time, like, it makes the drums stand out so much more when you have two drummers playing at the same time. And then, of course, you know, we got to hear Ringo do a lot of his classic Beatles stuff. He did Octopus's Garden, I Want to Be Your Man, Boys, he opened with Matchbox, he did Yellow Submarine, he ended it with A Little Help From My Friends, and went in to Give Peace a Chance after that, which was pretty cool. I mean, all in all, it was just an awesome concert, and we got to hear some of Ringo's solo stuff as well. So once again, just a big shout out to Jason Kroom and Vet Tickets. Thank you guys so much for just an amazing night. It was so much fun. I don't know if we have anything else to add.
Well, I was going to add just for people that
didn't know about the original Misfits lineup.
I'm one of them. I didn't know nothing about the Misfits until today. It's been quite the learning experience, and I've been enjoying it. Some really great music.
This is a phenomenal song that maybe one of our next Misfits episodes we'll dive into with Michael Graves, called Dig Up Her Bones.
Oh, I've heard that song.
All right, that's the newest version of the Misfits with Michael Graves on singing. So I think some of you guys might need to listen to some other songs.
We're at almost 2 hours.
I know. 2 hour episode.
I'm just trying to
All right, this is the Fiend Club.
We will pretend that this is the end. We're like losers all the time. We marching before, we're one and two. It's just evil all of the time. All of the time. We are the Fiend Club. We are the Fiend Club.
All right, that was that.
It was the man help you,
thank you guys. If you hung out and tolerated us for the entire almost 2 hours, we appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I really hope after hearing all that great Misfits music that it really inspired you guys to go and turn on some Misfits and really get into the Misfits. Sorry. There you go. There you go. But I really do hope that inspired you guys to go and listen to the Misfits and make you realize you need to hear more of the Misfits. Like the main goal of this episode and any episode we do, is just to turn you on to some really great music and get you to go and listen to it. Whether you're tired of listening to us or if you wait till the end of this episode, it's cool. But we just hope you go and listen to some great music.
Well, you need to fucking check out the Misfits because they have a lot of great freaking crazy songs based on the macabre with a lot of downpick and punk ass style.
And just remember, we ain't no goddamn son of a bitch.
And you gotta think about it, baby.
Crank those decibels, and we'll see you next time.